Bob today. Oh, great.
Yeah, it's really cute.
I'm glad you're taking Monday off.
We're back on the air now on ACB Radio, and we apologise for the slight outage there. It's quite interesting. I must mention, as a kind of a addition to this, that this is the second time Diana has been put through this ordeal, because the first time our friend Dan Kaiser had a technical glitch when he was recording an interview, and here we are, our server just had a slight crash for some reason. And it's interesting that, because I haven't even had any emails all week telling me that they loved me, but that's fine. Sorry to interrupt your flow there, Diana. You were telling us some very interesting stuff about the way that the foundation has evolved over the last 27 years.
Right. As I was saying, that when we first started out, we did a lot of kind of research and development with other institutes, such as the Smith-Ketterwell Eye Institute, and working in making technology, mainstream technology, accessible for someone who was blind or had low vision. And then we got very much involved with people who were both blind and deaf. And then in 1992, we realized that we were spreading ourselves a little bit too thin in trying to deal with all of the issues that someone who is deaf would have, and then also the issues that someone who is blind or low vision might have. And we decided at that time to just focus on what was our greatest strength, and that is people who are blind or low vision, and that's where our strength, our technology strength, really lays. So we stopped serving people who were deaf, just deaf. We still provide services for people who are blind and deaf, but we stopped the blind services because in our area there were already 9 other agencies that specialized in deaf services alone, and we felt that they could provide, you know, much better comprehensive services for them. So in 1992 there was a big shift in the population, and our services became much more refined and defined just for low vision and people who are blind, and we beefed up our technology services and our job placement services and our training services, and those are our 3 main focuses now.
It must have been a bit of a controversial decision at the time to decide that other market, that the deafness market, was already well catered for, because I guess you had some pretty loyal clients at that stage who were deaf.
Yes, but as I said, there were more agencies that were popping up at that time that were dealing specifically with just individuals who were deaf, and our services were just getting way too thin to provide the type of comprehensive services that we felt we could provide, and so the board had to make the decision, and they did, and I think it was a very good decision.
And as to follow up on Diana's, what Diana was mentioning is also that typically a lot of people incur blindness or low vision because of a major secondary or tertiary disability. So right now, over 60 or 70% of our population that we serve, our clients, have multiple disabilities. They may be very well deaf or hard of hearing or have other disabilities.
What kind of services do people receive when they come to the Sensory Access Foundation?
Well, we're a very specialized agency in that we serve the whole state of California, and we are the only agency in California whose services are totally dedicated to the employment of a person who is blind or visually impaired. That is, everything that we provide is based towards employment. We provide the job preparation and placement and development services for a person, and these are a full range of services, vocational services for a person in order to prepare them for placement into competitive employment. It includes things like, you know, preparing the candidate, the career counseling, the resume writing, the interview skills, coordinating worksite evaluations when a person is offered a job, the also conducting interviews, seminars for employers on how to go about accommodating someone with a vision impairment. Our other service is the Access Technology Service, and this is we provide a comprehensive evaluation services of a client's functional vision, job task analysis, work environment, recommending cost-effective equipment for accommodation or reconfiguration of the work environment, identifying the appropriate access technology for a specific need, integrating that technology with the existing systems in a company, designing strategies in order to acquire this equipment. We also provide a short-term loan of access equipment as well as computers, CCTVs, and then training for the rehabilitation professionals on this access technology, and then a full set of support services for employers to make sure that the person who has been hired can be successfully retained in the job. And then last, but boy, definitely not least, and this is Kenneth's department, is our access technology training services. And, of course, we're a little bit biased, but I think we have one of the finest training departments in the country, and this is very much due to Kenneth's efforts. We have three different types of training in this department. One, of course, is the individual training. We'll work with an individual on their specific training needs. We also have a program that's called the PC Power Series, and it's different training modules on the state-of-the-art of types of applications that people need to know in order to be competitive. And then lastly is what we call our CAS program, and that is it's the Customer Administrative Services Training Program. It's a 14-week program where clients come for 14 weeks, 5 days a week, being taught skills in customer administrative services in order to obtain entry-level positions in customer service or administrative services.
Of course, making a blind person's job ready is one part of the equation, but I wonder whether you also deal with or you've come across the attitudinal barriers that exist where often an employer or a potential employer closes their eyes and think, gosh, if I were a blind person, I couldn't do this job, and therefore I'm not going to give this blind applicant a chance either. Do you deal with that in any way?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, as I was saying, is that we conduct a lot of seminars for employers. We do a lot of awareness training. One of the things that's very unique about our vocational department and our placement department is that we have what's called a business advisory council, and it's made up of employers, and employers such as human resource directors, diversity directors, ADA coordinators, of a lot of different types of companies. I'll do some name dropping here. Sun Microsystems, Cisco, Hewlett-Packard, Novell. We have all of the managers of these departments that attend our meetings, and they give us employers and what their fears might be, what type of training an employer might need, how we can make inroads. They also work with our job ready for them. They will do internships within their companies with our candidates. So we get it from the employer's perspective. What is it that the employer has fear about, and how can we go about addressing those issues? And I have to say that we have very, very good success with that. Employers are very receptive to our candidates and to the technology.
I should add one thing, too, about our approach and our model, because a lot of people think that when someone is accommodated on the job technically, that it's sort of a one-day thing and you come in and leave. Our model actually includes functioning as a liaison between all the parties that are concerned, whether it's the Department of Rehabilitation, the client, the supervisor, the employer, other employees, and onboard trainers of the actual company. we actually go in, and it's actually a very extended process where we pull all the information together about the client and work with the client and the counselor or employer and start to develop the liaisons. And then while we're doing the accommodation, we go out in teams. So there's one person working on the technical aspect, and then there's another person also assisting. And the process is such that we educate the employer every time we go out. We spend time with the employer during that time, and evaluations are becoming more in-depth and complex, with more complex systems. So the average technical accommodation takes at least 3 days, with several days of preliminary work and several days of follow-up as well. It can easily go between 40 and 100 hours of work just on one client, just to do that technical accommodation.
So let's say that you have somebody who is interested in a particular job, and that involves using some proprietary database package or call center management software on the work site. Do you have the skills in-house to, for example, write the JFW scripts or the Windows set files to make that happen?
Yes, we do. And it's a continuing process. We have to we just had a meeting today talking about technology trends and things that we have to really shore up in our skills and make sure that our skills stay very competitive in our own staff. And it is something that all of our staff are trained in doing, is in doing scripting, the installation and configuration. There are times when we do have to, for expediency's sake, when we know it's going to take a really, really long time to get something done, then we may call in another vendor to assist us with some of this. So that we can get to other people and the vendor can just stay there and do the scripting. But absolutely, that is definitely part of our service, and we see that is going to be something that is actually increasing with the way proprietary software is changing.
Well, we have a caller on the line with a question for our guest from the I've done that twice now, Sensory Access Foundation. Let's go to the phones. Hello to you.
Yes, hello. This is Mike in Green Bay, and I have a question. When applying for a job, many job companies I find when I applied that they kind of get real nervous and really like as if they don't want to hire you. How do you overcome that and really tell them, hey, I can really be an asset. I can really be a good person for your job. I'll hang up and listen now.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question, because Mike is actually about to leave school. I think he's phoned us before. I think he's going to go on to college. And so I suppose for him, you know, as a younger person looking at graduating high school, he's obviously going to be very sensitive to the fear that many blind teenagers have, that no matter how good they are and how many qualifications they get, nobody's going to take them seriously because they're blind.
You know, that is a really good question. And that's something that we always have to address with every one of our job candidates. And the advice that we always give is, number one, is make sure you know your skills, and that you talk about them very, very confidently. Also is that you have to remember that employer is sitting there, and you very possibly are the first blind person that they have ever run into in their life, and have actually ever had to sit down and talk with. So you've got to remember that this person is going to have some fears. It is your responsibility to help belay those fears, and by addressing what you can do and how you can do it. And if you have to know what the job is that you're applying for and address those issues of the job and say, now, you're probably wondering, how can I do this? Let me tell you how I can do this. I use this type of software. This type of software allows me to do this and work competitively alongside with anybody else. You have to be very confident. You have to practice. You have to know what the job is, and you have to make sure you're a good match with that job. So it requires you to really do your homework. Know what equipment you use and how you use it. and talk very confidently to the employer about it, and I can guarantee you it will work.
Yeah, along with what Diana's saying, it's not, Mike, it's, most people have a problem going to an employer, especially with a limited experience showing on their resume, with, you know, they want the sort of desperate or want the job. It's important to remember that the employer wants you, ultimately, and you want to present yourself as a valuable asset to him.
It falls on the candidate to speak up and to make sure that those questions are answered. And, you know, just as Kenneth said, if your disability is obvious, then you had better address it, because it's sitting there like a big pink elephant in that office. And if you don't say anything about it, then it's almost guaranteed you will not get the job.
While we're on the subject of dealing with all these sacred cows that no one hardly ever talks about, let me ask you about the situation that I suspect is probably unique to those of us who are congenitally blind, and that is, I've heard, you know, I know that it's easy for older blind people to talk about the good old days, and we all do as human beings. We think that the days when we grew up were always better. But it has been said that with mainstreaming being the norm these days, and people perhaps not being given the grilling and blindness skills at special schools that they once were, that we're not dealing with the mannerisms and things that sometimes congenitally blind people acquire because they're not seeing that it's not socially acceptable, and they're not being told otherwise. And it can be anything from rocking to eye poking and even more unpleasant things. Is that a real problem, or do people who go on about that exaggerate the extent of the problem?
Kenneth, you want to start?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think that you're on to something there that's very, very important. I think it is an issue. I'm not sure how that is answered through either mainstreaming or not. I think at some point, when someone reaches a certain degree of adulthood, it becomes more and more important as they interact in the employment arena and the social arena to have a venue in which they can have people be honest with them about how they present themselves. And there is an extremely difficult point at which you want to ask other people, you know, so how am I doing, basically. There are catalysts for that that are relatively painless. One of the things is to go to a place like Sensory Access Foundation, where, or to a community college, or where there are employment services, and generally you will find people that will do mock interviews that will be videotaped, but what you can do is play that videotape back with a professional and say, you can listen to yourself for one thing, so you can find out if you're nervous or tapping or doing something. You can also find out if, you can usually ask them. They're very objective. They're not there to be mean. They're there to critique positively. And you can ask them, what do you think about my dress, my demeanor, my hair? What are the styles? You know, what are the clothing styles today that are appropriate for the workforce? You can also go to, well, there's a lot of things you can do. The list is very, very long, but I think that, Jonathan, you've hit on a very, very important thing that we usually classify into pre-vocational work, and yet most of the monies for vocational work are on the employment end, and you catch people that haven't really had a chance to have some introspection or some feedback from professionals, and I think that that is an ongoing problem.
Yeah, it's placement before job readiness so often, isn't it? People don't focus enough on the job readiness skills and funding of those skills.
Precisely.
Yes, that's very true. And we have a saying here is that when someone doesn't do that and places somebody into a position, we call it a drive-by placement. because it's almost guaranteed that that person is going to lose that position. And that's something that we really have zero tolerance for. We're very proud of our retention rate that we have with anybody that we place or that do a job retention for. We have a 97% job retention rate.
And I think it's really important for people who are applying for jobs to realize something. The resume got them to the interview, but the interview, unless you've been lying on your resume, the interview basically comes down to whether you're the right fit. So it is very important how someone presents themselves in their interview, because that is what gets the job, not the resume anymore. they've already cleared you on the resume if you made it to the interview. So it is your demeanor and your dress and the way you converse and interact with people in that interview.
And Jonathan, one of the things that we do in our vocational program is that we actually bring in outside people to do the training on personal hygiene, dressing for success, and the mock interviews. We actually bring in some of our corporate partners to do this. Nordstrom's department store will actually bring in a person who will go over on appropriate clothing to wear and will bring in samples of clothing and materials so that people can understand what goes together, what doesn't go together, brings in all different types of things to make people understand what is the best way to dress. What's the best way and most economical way to get a work wardrobe together? And then we'll bring in people from agencies like Manpower that will do our mock interviews for us. And these are professional recruiters. That's all they do. And they'll videotape our clients and go over the interviews with them and, you know, and they're tough. They will tell you, you know what? You're bouncing in your chair. That is not appropriate, you know. I mean, it's a real tough love type of thing that they do. And it really gets their skills to where they need to be and make them aware of things that they might be doing that is going to be a detriment to them being successful in the interview process.
You made the comment that you had a 97% retention rate when you've placed people, but how many people, what's the percentage of people who come to you that you actually end up placing?
Of the people that come to us, we place, remember, people come to us for three different types of services. And so of the people that come to us for placement, we are placing, I'm going to say, close to 60% of them.
Mm-hmm. And do people come to you from outside of California?
On occasion they do, mostly for training. And Kenneth, I think you can address this one better. I think you had someone that came from Cleveland or something.
Yeah, Cleveland. We had someone from Indiana.
Indiana, right.
And we're getting someone from Arizona.
And then a couple years ago, we actually did a long-distance job retention for Hewlett-Packard, and they were based in Moscow.
Goodness me.
And
we also had someone in Saipan. We were desperately
Saipan,
hoping
right.
that these were on-site evals.
Yes. We all had our passports ready. But
well, we're speaking with our guest from the Sex Reaction. I've done it again. I don't believe this. The sensory... oh, dear. Yeah, if we were recording this rather than doing it live, I could do it as a blooper. But anyway, it's the Sensory Access Foundation, and we have I should just say SAF to be safe. And we have a guest on the phone now, a caller. Guest, good evening to you.
Hi, John. It's Marvin in Louisiana.
Hello, Marvin. You've got a question for our guests.
Yes, I do. A question and maybe a couple of comments. Jonathan, we have to excuse you. Your life is quite stressful right now, I guess.
You're not wrong. You know, all this waiting is obviously having an effect on me.
But to the job interviews and things like that, I am a teacher of the visually impaired in Louisiana. And I'm also blind, and one of the things that I stress to all my students is their appearance that they make to other people, like it or not, they are looked at all their lives, as all blind people are, like it or not. We, you know, when we're around, people look at us and look at what we do and the way we conduct ourselves.
That's very, very true.
Yes, and also what people don't talk about often is that probably a majority of people's communication is body language, and it's very, very subtle, and it's very, very busy. And if you can't interpret that or convey it, then it has to be through other means like spoken. It's not expressions. And then you have that compounded with the fact that, you know, people don't see a lot of blind people around usually, so that it becomes sort of a spectacle, or perhaps just a novelty. But.
Right, and it's a very easy way for people to stereotype other people.
Yes, and I think that, you know, if someone comes to a job interview and they flip their hands or they rock or they move their heads around, all that thing, that leaves an impression, well, you know, maybe all blind people do that or whatever. And, of course, I know it's harder for young people. I don't think that I would have near a hard time finding another job if I were to for some reason lose my job here, because I have experience both in the teaching fields and in the technology fields. But for a young person, it's even more important.
I would absolutely agree with you. Yes.
Sure, there's that. With age, hopefully, comes additional experience and confidence, ultimately. A lot more confidence than a younger person who hasn't had a chance to build that up.
And that's all I have, and I'm enjoying the show, Jonathan.
Well, I'd have to say, I think you're doing a good job teaching your students.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks very much for phoning in.
Thank you,
and
have a great day.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye now. You're listening to Blind Line on ACB Radio Mainstream. I just wonder if we have another call. Do we have another call who's popped up on the board here? Nope, that's okay. We'll be speaking with our guest from the Sensory Access Foundation, and if you'd like to give us a call, I will give you that number. We've had a couple of server dropouts, so I apologise for that. The internet's been a very strange beast over the last few days, more unreliable than ever because of all the volume of very sweet I love you messages flowing through it. But we're with you now, and the number, if you'd like to give us a call, is 1-212-812-2800, and that number is in your title bar there if you want to check that out. That's 1-212-812-2800 if you would like to speak with our guests from the Sensory Access Foundation, and they'll be here for another 20 minutes or so. Area code 706, hello.
Yes, this is Joe Norton in Dalton, Georgia. How are you doing?
We're doing
good,
fine.
You
got
fine.
A question for our guests.
Sort of curious about something. I know that some of the blind people that I've talked to, including myself, have been employed in various customer service related jobs, customer support, that sort of thing. What could you say would be the percentage of people who are employed in that? Has anyone done any figures as far as, is that a job that a lot of blind people are put into, like call center type jobs, or is that something that they used to be employed in more, and that's now diminishing? Or what can you say about that? I guess too, skill level has something to do with that as well.
Well, I know that in California, customer service is one of the fast growing occupations in California, and they're expecting within the next 5 years another 26% growth just in that industry alone. It is
actually increasing then.
Oh, absolutely, it's increasing. And it's becoming actually a fairly well-paid position. I know that physicians, an average position here for someone going into that area, you're looking at a starting salary of usually around between $15 and $17 an hour.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Boy,
that's California.
I can tell what state I need to move to. Well, of course, the cost of living,
yes,
of course, goes up.
Yes, but the cost of living is...
If I could somehow teleport between California and Georgia, teleport into work or whatever. But another thing, I don't know how many years of experience you've had, but I know just from a personal standpoint, mm-hmm. I can say that I'm experiencing kind of sort of burnout, I guess you could say. And I'm wondering, do you have a lot of your folks that you've placed in those positions, do they have problems with burnout or anything like that? And how do you work on coping with a problem like that? Because after you've had especially certain touches for service, I'm glad I don't work for, say, the IRS or for Equifax. I know a blind guy that worked for Equifax, and that really got to him, having to work with people's credits and credit reports and people with problems. So I guess it depends too on what kind of service you're in. But what if anything do you have you observed in that area of burnout, and how do you go about coping with it? That's all I have. I'm going to just hang up and listen. But Jonathan, good program. Just got into listening to ACB Radio in the last couple of weeks and enjoy it. So my compliments to you as well.
Well, that's marvelous. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, I think burnout is one issue, but there's another issue that actually a lot of people don't address directly, and that is that no matter whether you're disabled or not, there is a comfort level that people achieve with a job. A lot of the jobs we get as youngsters are, you know, whether it's McDonald's or not, these are 3 and 4 month jobs. Sometimes they're 1 year jobs. But basically, when we hit that first career job, that first one that pays a decent salary, has benefits, and seems to be there indefinitely, we get to a comfort level. And every individual who wants to progress in their career has to take that very uncomfortable step of deciding, how do I want to progress? What do I want to be when I really grow up? And for a blind person, that's really compounded by the fact that there's a lot of access issues, and it actually there's a fear combined even greater than... Believe me, anybody out there has a fear of leaving the job they were comfortable at and going into a totally new thing that they may be enthusiastic about, but they're not really sure if it's too challenging. Now, for a blind person, we have to be really, really extra competent than the next person next to us sometimes with certain skills so that we can make sure that we get to keep that and we didn't just jump off the cliff. So that's I think that you're apt to stay in a job for longer than you really want to. And we've seen some burnout in people, but it's not really in the call centers as much as in some of the other fields, like medical transcription.
It's one of the reasons that we started one of our training classes, which is the PC Power series, is that it helps a person. We have a buzzword here in Silicon Valley. It's called lifelong learning, and it helps you on a career path and a career advancement. And this PC Power series is a way that you can promote this lifelong learning is while you are still on a job to increase your skills. And I would recommend that for anybody, is that you have to continually increase your skills. You cannot sit back on your laurels, you know, with the job that you have, because the way that things are changing, that job is going to change, and you could wind up being a dinosaur if you do not continue to learn as much as you can and in advance in every facet of knowledge that you can get a hold of, and really watch the trends in the job market and the technology field, because not the fads, but the trends. And pay attention to them and direct your skills toward them. Otherwise you're going to get left behind and you're going to be more prone for burnout.
And something that most people don't realize, particularly if it's your first job and you secured it and you're blind or visually impaired, is that it's really nice to get that income, that regular income and a decent salary. But ultimately, most people find out that if they're not challenged at that job, they're almost guaranteed to get burned out. And that people start to realize once they can meet the bills and they're sort of comfortable as long as they can get to that point, that really the game comes down to whether they have an intellectually challenging job for themselves.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about some of these trends in the technology field. For a while there, blind people were losing jobs because of inadequate access to Windows. What would you say, Kenneth, the state of access is to mainstream applications these days for blind people? How would you rate it?
Well, technology seems to move pretty quickly, but actually Windows has been around long enough now that we have pretty steady access to Windows and Windows applications. I think that we have... To the standard application, we have at least workarounds and ways of, we've got the core, some of the standard screen readers and Braille support, we've got some of the core stuff down so that we can work on the more scripting and things like that to accommodate the more proprietary things. As long as we can find that focus, we can work with it now. And it's sort of in a predictable layout, and as opposed to DOS, which it could be anywhere, that there are quite a few trends in access. From the PC standpoint, we're looking, I think, at better, at the top end of the curve, at least not too far behind it sometimes. But I think we're going to see some tendencies towards integrated systems, IOS products, like cell phones, pagers, talking type refrigerators. The most dangerous one in the PC market is probably the thin client concept and internet-based application launching. These things pose some pretty serious issues, I think, coming up in the next year or two.
Yes, I noticed that you're quite well connected. When I went to have a look at your website in advance of this interview, I saw the speech there from Bill Gates that he'd apparently given at a breakfast that you guys had hosted. So do you actively advocate, do you participate in conferences and discussions that look at the development of technology and the overcoming of these sorts of technological barriers?
Thanks for asking that. Actually, Dan and I just got out of a meeting, another meeting about that. Yes. We try to participate in all the conferences regarding the development and the state of access, and then we sort of converted in our own brand. So when we get back to the agency, to strictly to employment, one of our strengths is actually seeing so many venues where we have to try and apply the different types of technology. We have not yet accommodated a blind airline pilot, but we have done things like a dairy farmer, secretaries, lawyers, biomedical engineers, military intelligence, and the list goes on and on where we see technology work and where it doesn't work. So we have a long list of sort of where the parameters lay and where most of the jobs need access, where many do at least. And we're concentrating now, I think we're starting to reconcentrate our efforts in actually being an active part of the development process and evaluation process of whether things are accessible or not. We have always been a consultant for different firms, even access technology firms, that call us and say, so would you check this out for us and tell us what your opinion is? And we want to be even more participatory in that regard.
When you prescribe technology for someone, how does that process work? Because there are on email lists many stories about people who essentially say, when they are consulted for training, that, you know, I'm going to give you JAWS or I'm going to give you WindowEyes because it's the one I know, rather than actually looking at the application and the client's particular style of working and making a judgment based on those sorts of factual issues.
Well, that's why I started a training program. Or Diana let me. I think that one of the problems we are faced with is that everybody started at the same time sort of to recognize that training was very critical, that the equipment itself becomes a paperweight if people don't know how to use it. So now there's a bunch of people out there that are learning access technology and have been for many years, and there is no standard. If you know how to work Word and JAWS, you can call yourself a trainer, and you'll probably be hired by somebody. There is a problem in that there is no standard. I put people through a 4-hour interview to become trainers for me. They have to present, they have to create, they have to write curricula during the interview. And then they go through about an hour and a half of questions. And I actually watch how they approach teaching things like Windows Explorer, which I found most people who say they are trainers can't even really teach. If you can teach Windows Explorer in 45 minutes instead of 4 hours, that's a good trainer. The student may need to practice 15 more hours on how to get comfortable with it, but if you there's clearly a difference. And so what we've found is that we've been able to encourage the funding sources, like the Department of Rehabilitation, that training is becoming very, very critical, even if the training sometimes goes beyond the cost of the actual equipment. That it's useless equipment unless there's really effective training. And we're finding out that we're still in a state where the average client gets training, and because they're not sure what the standard should be, they say, okay, well, I guess that's it. And they're not really sure. They're not left with whether they truly are competitive. And I think that that's where I like our program, in that our goal is actually to make people competitive when they actually train, so that they have a good idea whether they can actually keep up with the next person.
So are you actively advocating for standards to be introduced nationally? Because I believe there was a conference a few weeks ago where this whole question of whether there need to be standards was discussed at length.
There have been several conferences. AFB is actually taking that. The American Foundation for the Blind is actually taking a strong interest in trying to get a standard developed. So are the Rehabilitation Engineers of North America, RESNA, to try and get some type of credentialing program. And perhaps different kinds of training that people can take and that they can actually pass in order to become credentialed at several different levels, because some people may want to train at an intro level, mostly keyboarding and some other things. Someone else may want to teach in a more variety of applications or technologies, and then there'll be an advanced level. So the initial breakdown, that was my understanding, is that there would be sort of a three-step credential program.
You used to provide, I'm not sure if you still do, the technology update that you used to do was highly regarded for impartial and very thorough evaluations of technology. Is that still a happening thing?
Absolutely. We wanted to take a look at it. Actually, it became what we called Access Review, and we enlarged it. We doubled the size and tripled the circulation to actually incorporate not just technology, but where it works and where it doesn't. So we used case examples of how we implemented the technology to give it sort of a context, as well as doing technology comparisons. And then we decided, you know, we need to figure out how to get this information to more people. So we set it down for a little while, and we sort of did some searching around where was the most effective way and what was the most effective content. We also sort of listen to AFB and watch them come up with Access World. And now we're going to sort of re-implement Access Review, and our principal access, at least initially, will be on our website and be web-based, so that we can, our general direction is to do technology comparisons, updates, reviews, also to look at the implementation of that technology. For instance, if you need to use, if we find out that Window Eyes or JAWS or Outspoken or SynthaVoice or whatever is needed to work with Microsoft Project, we'll go in there and we'll figure out for a client whether it works one place, but where it doesn't work, we'll write that up, and that'll also be part of our publication. We'll ultimately be putting that kind of information so people really get a context, so they can look and see, gee, I want to use it this way. Oh, you know, I know it works. I can tell an employer it works.
Right, and I just want to add that it was, correct me if I'm wrong, Kenneth, but I think it was about 2 years ago that we put Access Review on hiatus.
Yeah,
it was about 2 years ago. It was a very expensive publication to produce, and we reviewed it, and we said, okay, we know we want it, but let's bring it back when we can do it, have a wider distribution to people, and easier access for everyone. So we took the money that we were using for this publication, and I gave it to Kenneth, not personally, but for his training program, and that's how the training program got started. And then we just, I think it was just last week, we hired the person that is going to be bringing Access Review back via the net.
When is that going to happen?
Let's see. He actually officially starts on June 16th. Is that right, Dennis?
Correct. June 16th.
And
we have actually put some of the archives up on our website.
Right. Yeah. Some of the archives are already there on some of the best articles that were ever written. So we'll probably be seeing the first comparisons and case reviews, June, probably by September.
And will you be charging for that publication?
Not immediately. That's something that we're looking at. We want to decide whether or not we actually want to do that. We haven't gotten to that discussion yet. So for the time being and for a while, it will be completely free access on our website.
and also as a nonprofit organization, we don't do things to generate funding. Well, we ask for money.
Well, that's not true.
But the only way to find out whether the publication is meeting the needs of people, either educators, clients, people, whoever, is to actually not charge for it initially, but to see who's most interested in it and what their response is to the types of articles. So we really need to go through a phase of finding out how people like it and to be able to pass it out for them to have really easy access to it. And then we'll see what it ultimately turns into.
And so the net will be the only medium in which you'll be able to obtain this new version of the publication?
For a time being, yes.
Well, that'll be excellent. How does it compare, or how does it differ from the AFB effort that started earlier this year? I forget its name now. Access World, is it?
Access World, yeah. Right. From my understanding, and Kenneth, you could probably address this a little bit better, but from my understanding is that they're doing but ours, the way that ours differs is that we are doing it within the context of the work environment. How is the product compare to, from one product to another within a work setting? Can you add anything to that, Kenneth?
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. If some of the folks out there, listeners, read Access Review or had heard of Dueling Windows, that was a direct comparison of different tasks and different applications with different screen readers.
Yeah, now another Dueling Windows is long, long overdue, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think that's one way of comparing things, but you have to be very careful. Sometimes people come up with really strange tasks. I think it's important. For instance, when we did articles that were formatted like Dueling Windows, we chose tasks that were directly taken from our clients that they had to perform in the field. So we had placed it sort of in the employment arena that way. Not only that, but again, like Diana was saying, we're going to see where a client needs to use MS Project or some weird version of templates in Word. We're going to have a very in-depth knowledge of how that is working. That might not be the standard thing that goes in Access World. And we'll be publishing our findings on those types of things and categorizing it.
Right. And one of the other things that I think that makes it very unique is that we actually give case examples of cases when we've been out in the field in specific jobs and everything that needed to be done to make that job accessible. And I think that's fairly unique because it's a complete job task analysis. What are the things that you need to look at? How can you make it accessible? It's really valuable information to get out to prospective job candidates, to employers, to let them know that, oh gosh, I never thought about doing that. That makes a lot of sense. It's really valuable information.
Now, how can people find out more about the Sensory Access Foundation if they wish to take a look at the website? Maybe they're in California and want to find out about assistance. Where can people contact you for further information?
Okay, well, they can call us directly, and that's at area code 408-245-7330, or they can look us up on our website, which is www.sensoryaccess.com, and it has all of our telephone numbers, our TDD number, our fax number, and it also has the email addresses of each one of our service providers, and so they can contact them directly via the net.
Or if they have any questions directly related to the general services in any department, we also have training at sensoryaccess.com, employment at sensoryaccess.com, and technology at sensoryaccess.com if they're not sure or they can't make it to the actual website to get the email address.
Well, that makes it easy, and I'm sure, we should do another program or two on employment because it's something that obviously is a real concern to many people, and it's great to have experts in the field come on and offer some thoughts. So I appreciate very much you coming on the program. We've had two or three calls that were interesting, and I see a lot of people that have listened, so I really appreciate you taking your evening to have a chat with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jonathan.
Have a wonderful evening.
And congratulations on the new baby coming.
Well, I'm not sure if it ever is, actually, but, you know, we can live and hope. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
This is Blind Eye on ACB Radio, and that was our guest from the Sensory Access Foundation, and we appreciate them coming on the program. Well, now we come to our open forum part of the program, and if you would like to give us a call, you're welcome to... let me just deal with that. There we go. If you'd like to give us a call, you're welcome to do that. Really, I don't know what to talk about this week, to be honest. We have had a bit of a quiet week, waiting here, certainly for something to happen that hasn't yet. Kid's birthday yesterday, though. Richard's birthday. Richard was two, and that was very exciting. He got a radio. I meant to bring it in. I meant to bring it in and show you this little radio he's got. It plays all sorts of classics. It's got four channels. It's not a real radio. It's a toy radio. It plays all sorts of cool things. Anyway, area code's 336. Hello. Hello there. Speak to me. Nope. Okay. Well, that's fine. Thought we had a call there, but apparently not. What else has happened? Well, did you get hit by the love bug this week? I must say that I didn't. I didn't get a single message from anyone telling me that they loved me, which I must admit, for the first time in my life, I was quite grateful for. I mean, we all want to be loved, but not, I guess, in this context. And I got an email. There are a couple of emails I've had on the subject, actually, to do with the love bug and viruses, but we might come that... come back to that a little bit later. We have a call from area code 206. Good evening to you. Hello there. I can hear myself echoing away in the background. Speak to me. Well,
hello.
Hi there.
Jonathan?
Yes, indeed. Who am I speaking with?
Hang on, my system is totally messing up here. Just a second.
Oh, I know. I recognize that voice. Yes, that's not a problem. are you organized, Marlena?
Well, you know, Jonathan, here's the deal. I was trying to talk to you through my fancy new board, and what's happening is... that I'm hearing you through a loop.
Oh, that's a nice thought.
Are you
thought.
Still there? There. Now, all right. Yeah, what I've discovered is that I wanted to talk with you on my soundboard, my new phone toy, but I can't do it because you keep looping back since I'm picking you up from the web, which is going through my Mackie mixer, which is then retransmitting to the board. Anyway,
that sounds like what will be happening. Now, but you've got your big debut on ACB Radio actually at this time tomorrow. As we speak, you will be on the air with the first program with a very nice bread recipe that's going to overload our email servers, people wanting this bread recipe.
And I hope so. And next week... we have the an interview with the first disabled person and probably the only disabled person ever to climb Mount Everest. And I think the following week we're going back to the culinary side of life, and I just about have an interview lined up with a coffee roaster.
Really? How exciting.
Yeah. We're also going to be doing portraits of folks in the national office. Talked with Charlie today, and we're working all that out. The National Office staff's very excited about doing that. I'm also looking at a program on beer making and a program on wine making.
Well, our American audience really needs this so that they can be rescued from the Budweiser.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So this is Blind Spot on at 10 o'clock for the first time at 10 o'clock Eastern. That's 2GMT Thursday night / Friday morning. And then, of course, it's repeated right throughout the next 24 hours and also from time to time throughout the weekend. So this is very exciting.
And, you know, I really hope that people will email me with some suggestions for programs that they would like to hear. I'm trying to get way ahead of myself so that I don't ever have this last minute, what do I do? So it doesn't have to be a blind person who's being interviewed. The only criteria is that it's of general interest, and I'm billing it sort of as a no-tech, low-tech experience, because we have lots of good tech experiences happening on ACB Radio. So, you know, as one of my promos says, Andy Warhol said we get 15 minutes of fame before we die, and I'd like to offer you yours. If, you know, you're doing something you'd like to be interviewed about, or have a friend, to send me in. Can I do this, Jonathan? Can I do this promo?
Oh, absolutely. Go for it.
Okay. All right. Just send an email to Marlena. It's Marlaina at acbradio.org.
Yep, and I know that address works because I've emailed you. And I got an answer back.
Yeah, I was so excited.
And I printed it out, and I put it on my studio wall, and I tell everybody, I point to it and say, look, I got an email from Marlena, and here it is on my studio wall.
Jonathan, your nose is growing. And listen, my thoughts are with you and Amanda.
Thank you. We appreciate that. It can't be far away. The due date was actually yesterday. I think the problem was that, you know, we thought that it was going to be a bit earlier, because all the signs were that it was going to be an early baby. But I think, in fact, what's going to happen is he's going to be a big one.
Yeah.
Because Richard was 8
pounds 10. Maybe by this time next week, we will be popping the sparkling cider and champagne corks worldwide.
Lovely. Now, actually, I tell a lie. Heidi was 8'10". Richard was 9'9". So, gosh, who knows what this one will be.
Oh, my gosh, they're getting bigger.
They are.
Well, you guys just hang in there, and we'll get those sparkling cider and champagne corks ready. And maybe next week on Blind... That's right. We got to get the right sound effects. So, you know, we got to... And maybe next week on Blind Line, Jonathan, we can clink and pop.
Excellent. I'll look forward to that. Although all this microphone problems I'm having. But no, I'm looking forward to Blind Spot very much. And we'll look forward to its debut tomorrow evening.
All right, and again, I apologize for the looping in the beginning. That was I got so confused. I kept saying, why is Jonathan repeating himself? And then I suddenly realized it was I who was creating the loop. So lessons learned, but my new phone toy works very well, and I'm very, very happy to have it, and very surprised that my wonderful husband bought it for me, because it's a serious professional piece of equipment. So
yes, a very high-tech digital hybrid telephone unit that most radio stations would dream of having.
Yeah, it is. And you know what, Jonathan? It even, when you push the button to introduce the call, it even does that sound, you know?
You do this so well.
I can also imitate synthesizers, too, but we won't go there.
No, not today, anyway.
No, that is right.
Well, they're backing up here, Marlena, so I better deal to them, and we'll talk with you next week, no doubt. Well, I hope so.
I can't wait. You have a good week.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Okay, you're listening to ACB Radio, and we've got a couple of calls backed up, so let's deal with them, and we say first hello to area code 336. Hello to you.
Hi, Don. This is Jess from North Carolina.
How are you, Jess?
All right. Now that I have a new mini disc that I got last week.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Marvelous. Oh, did you get that for your birthday or something? Did you have a birthday recently, or was it someone else?
Oh, yeah, actually, I did.
Happy birthday. Can I ask, how old does that make you now?
14 years.
Well, that's a pretty good vintage, I reckon. Gee, that takes me back, I must tell you. Yeah, so you had a good one? You had a few friends around and stuff like that, or go out somewhere, do the McDonald's or something?
Yeah, actually, I'm in the school band. Had to go out for a competition in Virginia, so that was quite a thrill.
Excellent, excellent.
I have a question for you about dial pad. I can't seem to get that darn thing working at all.
What screen reader do you use?
JFW.
Okay, and what is it that you're having difficulty making a call, or that when you make a call you can't be heard, or what's happening?
Well, I can't find the clear link on the thing.
That's interesting. What happens is when you log in, there are two windows.
Well, yeah, I get all this. When I log in, I get all this stuff about mylog.pl or logoff.pl, all this junk.
Okay. What happens is, of course, when you log into Dialpad, you have another instance of Internet Explorer running. So you've got two copies of Internet Explorer, and the one that has the links with the numbers is the one that says Dialpad, and then it has your user ID in the title bar. And what I can do is hit insert F7 to get to the list of links, push C until I hear clear, and then push enter, and that will get me to the right place, and then I'm able to just type in the numbers that I want to call.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll have to give that a shot. One more question I have for you. What are mini discs actually good for? I mean, like, for recording nature or what?
Well, what I find it's good for is that it's a very tiny machine. The mini disc I have, I can carry it in my pocket. If I'm wearing a suit, I can put it in my jacket pocket and pin a little microphone on. And yet, it's pretty much CD quality. It does use a form of compression, but it's pretty darn good. And I can do edits in the field. So if I'm doing something out and about, I can edit it down, and then I just dub it onto the PC using SoundForge. And I've got program content to use. So I guess I like it because it's a very, very portable editing tool.
What mini disc are you using? Like, one from Sony or what?
Yeah, I suppose. So you just... Which mini disc player did you get?
I think I got a Sony... Oh, crap. What's the model number? Sony M500.
Oh, okay, so that's quite a new one, I think. Yeah. And does it have the jogging wheel?
Excuse me?
Does it have the little wheel on it that you have to turn for some of the functions?
No, let's see. For the record function, you have to turn this little slide switch. You'll hear the little thing kind of like can.
Okay. Yeah, some of them come with this little round wheel. Yeah, you got to turn it. It's like a little dial. But you'll find that what I find often with these appliances, because they're not absolutely accessible, you do have to memorize functions. And what I find works for me, and people have different ways of dealing with this, is I either scan the manual if it will scan, or have a reader read it to me, and then I just make notes. In my case, I make notes on my Braille light, and then as I'm starting to get to know a product, I refer to those notes as I go. And then if I use it often enough, it becomes automatic.
Yeah, I'm the same way too, because, it's a very accessible thing to use, and I like that I have it now, you know, it's pretty good, little machine.
Yeah, well, I wish you luck with that new toy. It sounds like you'll get a lot of fun out of it, I guess. Now that you've got one, you have to work out what it's good for, but that's okay. I better go to the next call, because he's been waiting a while.
Okay. Yeah. Well, anyway, thanks, John.
Oh, lovely to hear from you. Have a nice night.
You too.
Okay, bye. Hello to area code 924, and thank you for waiting.
Thank you, Jonathan. How are you?
I'm very well. I thought it would be you, but I didn't want to be presumptuous in case somebody else... Does anyone else actually live on 924, or is that the Capel area code?
It's actually 920.
Is it? Oh.
Yeah, I don't know why it's keep... You say that every week, that it's 924.
Let me just check. I'm sure it's...
Okay.
I see what the problem is. Yeah, no, that's me again. It's saying, you see, I've got my synthesizer speaking full numbers, and so it's saying 924, but why it's doing that is because it's saying 920, and then your number starts with a 4, so that's why it's doing it.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I gotta talk to you. I'm actually streaming you on MRL right now. But what keeps happening is it keeps trying to rebuffer all the time, and then during the interview, I kept getting a whole bunch of the stream would lock out. It would say ICY, stream not found. Then about 5 minutes later, it would come back, and then it would keep logging out. So I don't know if it's Live365 or what it is, but
we
I think
it might be or some sort of internet lag problem. We had two that I'm aware of. There may have been more. We had two drops on the server today, we are normally pretty solid these days. Most of the glitches are sorted out, but I have found that the internet has been, you know, it still seems to be recovering from the shock of the I Love You virus, to be honest, because it just sort of tends to be playing up a bit. Things are running slower than they normally do, and all sorts of things. So I guess things will come right eventually.
Now, did you get the I Hate You virus, as I call it?
No, I didn't get that either.
Not that one. Wow, so it's really not an I Love You virus. It corrupts your MP3s, and for me, that runs a radio station. That would be crucial, because that would be bad if that happened, because... Ooh, I don't know.
What, did you actually get a copy of this virus? Did anyone send it to you?
No, thank goodness. But, like technical support people at my ISP, they got it. Kim Commando, the computer show, Wiz got it. A lot of people that I know got it. I've never got any of those viruses that people mentioned. Good times, happy 99. I never, ever got a virus on my computer.
Okay, I did get... I think I got Happy 99, and I also got the Pretty Park one, which a lot of people seem to get. I've had that a few times.
Did you get Happy 99?
Yeah, I got Happy 99, and I got Melissa. But the thing is that, I mean, one has to be very careful about opening attachments. One of the real worries is that by default, and I've never been able to work out, even before the viruses came along, why this happens. But I note that Windows by default turns off file extensions, and so what happens is that even if you're remotely aware that you should never run files with a VBS extension, if you've got file extensions turned off in Windows, for instance, the dude who wrote this virus was very clever, because it's actually called, I think it's called iloveyou.txt.vbs, and if you've got Windows turning those file extensions off, what you actually get is, when you see the name of the attachment, it says iloveyou.txt, and everybody knows you can't get viruses from a text file, so you run the text file, not knowing that Windows has hidden the VBS extension.
Oh, now, don't you need to program it on a VBS, or does it automatically run?
Sorry, what was that?
Like, don't you need a special program to run a Visual Basic file? Because, I mean, or can you just run it from the Explorer and it opens it?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, because it's associated with, you know, with the Visual Basic interpreter. I believe that's how it works.
Now, when you were in Happy 99, did it make any noise?
Oh, no, because I never ran it. I mean, gee, I don't run attachments from people that I... I didn't use it then, because I don't think McAfee Clinic was around, but I personally am a big fan of McAfee Clinic, which is a web-based virus solution, and every morning at about 1:30, it goes out and tells me that there's an update, if there is one, and I make sure I download the updates every morning, so... The problem with that approach, of course, is that it's always reactive. For instance, the I Love You virus came out, did a lot of damage, and then the virus companies came out with a fix. So you still have to be a bit cautious, and that's the trouble. These viruses play right into the hands of gullible people who are not terribly computer savvy. And even then, you know, you get Microsoft putting out messages like, don't run an attachment from people you don't know, which is absolutely zero use in this instance, because the viruses often came from people that you do know, because the virus was being sent out through people's address books. So you could get an email message from your wife at work, or your brother or your uncle or something, who with a subject line of jokes, and you think, oh good, my uncle sent me some jokes, and you click on the thing and boom, you got a virus.
Or who wants to tweet a message that says I love you? I mean, people would be tickled to death to say, oh, someone loves me, let's read it.
Yeah,
and then their files get, you know, corrupted. I mean, I think that these, you know, these mafia people, whoever they are making these viruses, I hope that they get a lot of time in the slammer, and
that they don't that they get their computer taken away. Now, Kevin Mitnick, who is one of the well-known hackers, he got in prison for 3 years, and he can't use computers, cell phones, any electronic gadgets that store or use a computer chip in it. I don't know if you've heard about that guy.
Yes, I've heard the name, certainly, yeah. Yeah.
And his excuse was, I was only trying to learn the system.
I just wish that we could channel the brilliance of some of these virus programmers into writing more songs for the Dick Talk.
Yeah, I love that. Now, I hear they don't make Duck Talk Express anymore. Is that true?
I don't know. Someone will. Somebody will be able to ring in and tell us whether that is a fabrication or not.
Wow. I love Blind Line, and it's a really good show. And, oh, man, me and my best friend, who I won't mention here, oh, man, we have fun. I mean, we talk all about the show. We talk about the host, you know, how good of a host he is. And
yeah.
That, how's...
well, that's marvelous.
How's your wife...
And what was that? Sorry, I missed that.
How's your wife?
My wife. Well, thank you for asking. She's very fed up, but you know, very ready to get on with things. But you know, it's in the hands of nature or whatever, and I'm sure we'll get there eventually. But
yeah,
I appreciate you giving
us
a call, Mike. And let me just push this. There we go. I cut him off this week. For those of you who don't listen regularly, Mike always rings up and pushes the button on me, so I thought, well, I'd get in there first. You're listening to Blind Line, and we do have a free board of calls right now. And courtesy of Spiderphone, you're welcome to give us a call. We're on the air live between 9 and 11 Eastern, 6 and 8 Pacific on a Wednesday night, 1 to 3 GMT Thursday mornings. And if you'd like to give us a call, and it's during that time, well, the lines are open. And here's what you do, courtesy of our friends at Spiderphone, and thank you to Spiderphone very much for donating the facilities that makes this call impossible. You just pick up the old telephone and give us a call at 1-212-812-2800. That's the number for the Spiderphone service, 1-212-812-2800. And then you'll be asked to enter a PIN, and the PIN is 10-83-41-73, 1-0-8-3-4-1-7-3, and that will connect you to us here at Blind Line, and you can talk to us as that caller has just done now. Hello, caller, you're straight on the air. This is Blind Line.
Hi, Jonathan. It's me, Marvin, on my cell phone.
Ah, that's much better, Marvin. So you're actually spending a penny, as they say. Well, not in the normal context of how they say that, but anyway, I'll keep quiet before I get into more hot water.
No. Actually, I had to take a ride with my wife. She is we're having the census here in the U.S. this year, and she's in the numerator, and I had to take a ride with her for her to deliver her paperwork.
Do you know the old John Denver song about "You fill out my census"? You know that one?
That's the one.
Yeah.
You want the winner for the tech support, colleague?
Oh, yes. Go and tell us support stories.
We had a guy this week, and he couldn't get a dial tone on our service.
Yeah. Oh, ain't that... Suppose... And hit pretty hard in terms of... Oh, mate, you're on an analog cell phone there.
Yeah, it's a digital cell phone.
Oh.
Sort of.
Man, if that's digital, then goodness help us if you ever go analog on your tools.
It has. It really has. We've gotten a lot of things from it. In fact, the first day, even though I only work on weekends, they asked me to come in and take some phone calls. It was so busy.
So you had to call in reinforcements.
Yeah, we did, but especially the first couple of days, because we couldn't figure out what was going on.
And because you work, for those who don't know, you're working with an ISP. Were they able to put in some sort of regime that deleted messages with the virus from the actual mail server, so that there was a point at which people weren't downloading them anymore?
No, we couldn't. I mean, it changed so fast and it was upon us so fast that we had no warning whatsoever, just like everybody else.
We've got a pretty bad connection there, Marvin. I might have to might have to flag it away. But I wish you luck with your census assistance.
Well, my wife, it's keeping her busy, and you know, the pay's not bad either.
Oh, well, that's the main thing. When does that process finish? How long do Americans have to complete the census and get it all back?
Well, I'm not sure it has an end, because what they're doing now is they're going in and taking care of the people who did not send their forms out, and they even have another operation after this, so probably another 2 or 3 months.
Well, okay. Is it compulsory to fill them in?
They say it's supposed to be, but a lot of people don't.
Well, all the best with it, man. Nice to hear from you, and we'll look forward to keeping in touch.
All right.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye.
There you go. That's Marvin Rush calling via cellular phone. Isn't that great? I wonder if there is anybody listening who is a blind census enumerator. I presume that that's possible. One would hope it is, because surely a lot of the processing must be electronic, I would imagine. So if any of you went for a job with the census people, or if you're actually doing it, it would be quite interesting to hear about that. Also, how has the census been? Is it a model of accessibility? Are you able, for instance, I don't know the answers to this question, not being a US citizen, of course, and living there, but are you able to complete the census online? Because from a distance, it seems to me that generally the US government is very much internet aware. After all, Al Gore invented it. And so presumably there is a way, is there not, for you to go online and complete a nice accessible form that is the census? Although I presume there might be some issues of verification there. So is that happening? I'd be really interested to hear whether anybody has inquired into this, whether there has been a successful resolution to this, that people are in fact able to complete this online or in some other form. Do you get braille copies of the forms? Give us a call if you'd like to talk about this. You found it in terms of accessibility this year. We have a census in this country every 5 years, and it is compulsory, and we've had all sorts of issues too here surrounding disability and how it is asked about, and indeed whether it is asked about. So if you'd like to talk censuses, or is it sensei? Whatever. 1-212-812-2800 is the number. 1-212-812-2800. Courtesy of Spiderphone, tap in the PIN after that, 10-83-41-73. That's the PIN, 10-83-41-73. You don't have to talk about the census or anything that we've talked about so far. You may want to talk about what our guest from the Sensory Access Foundation had to say. A very interesting discussion about employment, and I apologise, we had a couple of glitches in it. But really interesting guests, and sounds like a very interesting place. So you might want to follow up on discussion that we had with those guests, or raise something completely different. Love to hear from you, and we still have a good 20 minutes of the program to go, so there's lots of time for you to call, and if you call now, you get straight through, no waiting, because the board is free here on Blind Line at ACB Radio Mainstream. While I wait for you to rescue me from talking to myself, let me tell you that the ACB Radio Cafe, we recently put in quite a lot of new music in there, and so if you haven't checked out the ACB Radio Cafe in a while, you might like to do that. We've got a much better balance of artists now as we get more in the system, and it's really worthwhile, I believe. So check it out. We've got a modem stream and a broadband stream, so if you're a DSL or a cable or an ISDN listener, you can hear it in crystal clear stereo. Let's go back to the phones. Hi, this is Blindline.
Hi, Jonathan. It's Maureen.
Hello, Maureen. Nice to hear from you.
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm just great, thanks, considering.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about your employment topic, if I could.
Right.
First of all, I would like to put in a plug, if I could, for one of my friends who happens to be a blind career counselor, and she works nationally. She works by phone and in person with people. Completely independent of rehab and agencies like that, so for some people it's an alternative to that, and she's just a very good resource in terms of career issues, not limited to disabilities per se. So I wondered if I might be able to give out her number.
Oh, sure. That, you know, I'm sure there'd be people who are really interested in this field.
Her name is Karen Rose. She practices out of Berkeley, California, but as I said, she has she does have a toll-free number, and the number is 1-800 1-800-246-5100. That's 1-800-246-5100. And she will get back to people, and she can do career counseling by phone. She also happens to be a psychotherapist, so if people are at all interested in that field, interested in, let's say, finding an internship, psychology internship or counseling internship, she can help with resources like that as well.
And have you had any experience yourself or feedback about the Sensory Access Foundation? Because I know you're living in California. You know, how are they perceived by customers over there?
Yes, you know, I've been wondering if I should say this. I'm afraid I can't be very objective because I've had quite a negative experience.
Okay.
In terms of they were trying to set me up with a system and, you know, where I was working, and it just did not work out at all. And for a very long time had some negative repercussions in that my employers were very, after that, very reluctant, of course, to get at all involved in getting any kind of equipment for me. And then when I got some equipment at home through another dealer, who, by the way, was a very small company, and sometimes there's something to be said for working with companies who are not the big, you know, the largest players on the block. You know, it's just a different situation. And when I got equipment at home, then I kind of learned what the equipment can do and had more personal experience. And so I had a much better idea of what I needed at work. And then I'm now using that same company that set me up at my home. And I'm really glad that my employers, you know, went for it again a second time. But yes, sometimes companies like that, when they get larger and develop a large base, they're not as, you know, there are problems with those type of companies.
I suppose the larger one gets as a company, difficult quality control issues can be. And, you know, some of the larger technologies, access technology, have come into similar criticism as they've expanded over the years as well.
Yes, that's... You know, I think that's always an issue that companies need to keep in mind, and that's, I think, what needs to be kept in mind, too, when we're looking at standardization. That's sort of a two-edged sword, because word of mouth generally does eliminate or helps to give people the information as to what, who is good and who knows their stuff and who doesn't, but standardization some just is to the advantage of those who have already made it big in the field.
Yes, there's nothing quite like word of mouth. I mean, especially in a tight-knit community like the blind community, particularly those who are well-networked, you know, and they're using email all the time and they're on the lists, word gets around as to who...
Right.
Well, they're really backing up here, Maureen, so I suppose I better deal with them. And it will,
all right.
Nice to hear from you.
Take care.
Okay. You're with ACB Radio Mainstream on the Blind Line Show. I'm Jonathan Mosen, and it's nice to have your company. We've got a couple of calls, so we'll move things along. Hello to area code 615.
Good evening there, Jonathan.
Hi, how are you?
Been a couple... Oh, you're about in the census.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Are you there?
I'm just dealing with the board here, and I missed that.
Is it coming about the census?
Oh, yes, please do. Yes, what's your perspective on that?
Yeah, okay, as far as I can determine, I don't think it's really possible for a blind person to be a census enumerator because you do actually have to fill out the paper forms as you go out from house to house. And as far as filling out the census online, it is available online to fill out. However, you must enter a special number that is only found on the printed census form. So if you don't have someone to read the number to you, you cannot... know what it is, and you just cannot fill it out online.
It does seem rather curious that in, you know, in the last year of the 20th century, here we are in the last year of the old millennium, that they're not using computers, you know, little laptops or palm tops or something as they go from door to door.
Well, and still going with the old paper. I personally had the short form, so I did not have too many questions. What was rather amusing, I had somebody read it to me, of course, and Webb's one question was put with Gray was, are you a male, sir?
Oh, gosh. But then I suppose...
It's a tough one, isn't it?
It's a tough one. Because if we had them presuming things, we'd get upset about that. If they didn't ask us all the questions that were on the form, they weren't really telling us what was on the form, wouldn't we?
Oh, absolutely. I deal with that all the time. That's something I really hate to deal with around here is people telling me, giving me a summary of what's on the form and not actually reading it to me.
And of course, these days, you may well be biologically male, but you may not choose, in this wonderful age of self-identification, you may not choose to identify yourself as one.
Well, I guarantee you, I will and always will be. Am, now have been, always will be just that.
Well.
No question about it.
That is about as definitive as we can get it, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you very much for that. I appreciate it.
Okay, check with you next time.
Yeah, look forward to it. Bye now.
Okay, bye.
ACB Radio Mainstream, this is Blind Line, and if you'd like to give us a call, still some time, 1-212-812-2800, and then you can enter the PIN 10-83-41-73, courtesy of Spiderphone. Hello to area code 916.
Hi, Jonathan, this is Dan calling just to say I'm a man. After that last call.
I'm pleased that you know this.
After that last call, I have to follow that. I mean, what can I say? Hey, I like the spider phone. Now they tell you before you do that you're ready to go into conference.
Yes, that's when we put a call in what they call listen only mode, and that means you can hear the program down the phone. And when I put you to air, it tells you that.
Oh, cool. I was really impressed. I was at Sensory Access last week, and I had the big grand tour, and I just was very impressed with the setup. And I think part of the complaints that people may have about Sensory Access is part of the problem of everyone's just overwhelmed with having to, you know, teach technology, to assess technology, and I think, in my opinion, there's a crisis going on, either under-trained, under-qualified people who aren't knowledgeable in access technology or overwhelmed.
Yeah, you see, I know that the ACB, for instance, is quite strong on certification. And, in fact, I've been reading quite a lot of interesting dialogue on the ACB, which it and, you know, the politics of the blind community I highly recommend. But I'm not as unequivocal about this, because here in New Zealand, for instance, that you can have people with qualifications and rehabilitation, and you know they've been through the communications component, that the module in the rehabilitation program and all this sort of stuff, totally not equipped to teach modern computer technology. I mean, you know, you might be able to teach somebody how to touch type, but I just think that the problem with standards is so often they are set and devised and imposed by cited rehabilitation university professor types who have made a lifetime out of studying us instead of actually living through real life experiences, and they shut out many of the people with practical real world experience about our needs and our solutions.
Well, what caught me about your interview was I don't know if it was you or someone mentioned the biggest standard is shutting off the monitor. You know, I think that's an important key for any trainer or anyone to be, if you can train software access technology, if you can train software programs by shutting off the monitor, then you're going to do okay. And I hate to say I would be a little prejudiced towards a sighted trainer, unless I knew that sighted trainer could operate without the monitor.
Yes. It is so easy, you know. I believe Windows is far more accessible these days. Allows us to do much more than DOS ever did. But we do work in a very different way from the way that most sighted people work in Windows. And I think that's something that's very important. It is so difficult, particularly for novice Windows users, to go down to a local training institution and get worthwhile training.
Yeah, I've worked in technical support, customer service positions. I worked for a road service company for 8 years, and I didn't get any training, but I just BS'd my way through and basically said, I know how to do this system, and then when the boss said, sure, let's see if to ask the girls to check you out, then when the boss left, I said, hey, could you quickly teach me this console? And in about 3 minutes, I learned it, and I had a job for 8 years on that. But, you know, I think the secret is positive attitude, grooming, dress for success, and with those things, I think you can get pretty far. Even go pushing the envelope beyond what maybe you can do, as long as you have those key elements, I think you're going to go far to get employment.
I think that's good advice. And those comments actually bring to mind something else to do with this whole technology thing for me, which is that it is actually quite easy to, as you put it, BS your way through and get quite good technology jobs. And I think this is often half the problem. The people doing the hiring in the first place, and maybe this is changing as the CEOs of today are more computer literate than the CEOs of yesterday, but if you can blind them with science, if you pardon the pun, and convince them by using all sorts of jargon and things that you actually know what you're talking about even when you don't, you are held up as the guru. And I've seen so many examples in blindness agencies where you know, there are very informed blind people who know a lot more about screen reading and different applications than the so-called professionals who are actually supposed to be providing instruction and assessment and advice. I don't know what the answer to that is, because if you're hiring and you don't actually understand the field in which you're hiring, you've got a bit of a catch-22 situation there.
And you look at a lot of the CEOs today, they're just young 30-year-old geeks who struck it rich on an idea. Next thing you know, they're having to hire employment people. And I think one of the things that SAF didn't mention, and I think one of the key things for someone doing a resume is that you need to know the key words that particular company is looking for, because when they're hiring, companies look at key words. Their human resources department, and they know exactly, they just sift through and crunch numbers, crunch keywords on that resume. And if you know what keywords that HR person's looking for, you at least got into the interview.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And another thing that I think is quite useful is this whole concept of exploratory interviews where, and I've done this a couple of times in my life, where you're interested in a particular industry and you go, you give someone a call or you meet them in a social situation or something, and you just say to them, look, I'm quite interested in this industry. Would you give me 15 minutes of your time to tell me what qualifications I need, what you look for? And you get to speak with them in a situation other than a job interview situation. They're often very revealing in those sorts of interviews.
Yes, yes, it is. And I hope that we touch upon this subject more often on ACB Radio and, get into resume writing it would be a really interesting show on my friend Marlena. By the way, Marlena was in my guide dog class, so I know her quite well. Could do something on what are people wearing for job interviews, and they wear a suit and tie every time, or do you have to dress down for certain companies or what? I mean, I know the answer, but people don't, and it would be interesting to do that. But I know you have other calls, and great show tonight, Jonathan.
Well, thanks, Ann, and I want to just say I agree with that. I'd be really keen for somebody a type program for ACB Radio, and one of the things I always use, it seems to have gone now, but one of the things I used to enjoy in ACB Reports is that Laura would have a fashion consultant on there, and she used to say some really interesting stuff.
Oh, yeah, and that's a very apropos subject. Before I go squeeze Amanda for me, and good luck.
You reckon it'll do the trick?
I hope so. Squeeze hard. Okay, bye.
Meanie. See you later, Dan.
Okay.
Bye. This is ACB Radio Mainstream on the Blind Line Show. Still got about 10 minutes if you want to give us a call, courtesy of Spiderphone. Hello to area code 706.
Hi, Joe Norton again. Just wanted to jump in here at probably close to the tail end of the program here, but was just thinking about something that came to mind when you're talking about employment and getting the technology working and everything. It's kind of an interesting experience that happened to me when I first started my job. They got this company had never hired a blind person before, but this is one of these cases where something we call the old boy network, in some cases here, worked. The person that basically the CEO, or well, he wasn't the CEO, but the family owned the company. He had confidence in me, and this company ended up buying me not only the PC, but they got a DeckTalk PC, not to mention a Navigator 80, which is pretty good stuff for never having hired a blind person before.
Well, that's a fantastic story. And you know, I guess it's so difficult to say this to people who are still struggling and looking, but the phrase "don't give up" is so true, because you know, every so often you just find an employer that is incredibly accepting and willing to really give someone a chance and to actually bend over backwards to make it work.
But the interesting thing about that was when they got the Navigator and everything, of course, I'd never used anything like that before. I'd seen one at a demonstration, but I thought it was the greatest thing since sliced bread, and it's still fantastic to have one. And I don't underestimate that how fortunate I am in that case. But an interesting thing that happened is when they did hire me, we had a rehab engineer come up from Tech, and from Georgia Tech, that is, and he set up all these scripts with JAWS. He started out with ASAP, but it didn't have the scripting capabilities that JAWS had. So he started using the scripts, but he underestimated, I guess, my ability to use the Braille display, because he'd seen jobs in, I think, some hotels and stuff where blind people did not use the Braille display. But in this particular job, the Braille display did work, because in my job I read a lot of carpet roll numbers, dial-out numbers, a whole lot of numbers going up and down the screen, looking at various items, roll sizes, that sort of thing. And you can't beat Braille for doing that. It's a lot better than sitting there listening to a deck talk 0.5 feet, 0.6 inches, 34 feet, 6 inches. You know, a lot better. So always the importance too is looking at each job to see what can the technology do, and you know, where can the technology be used, as opposed to just relying on one form of technology. Because it's I would recommend anyone, if they have Braille, to by all means use it.
Oh, absolutely.
Louis Braille didn't ever live to see Braille recognized officially, and I deplore the trend towards some people thinking that Braille is not something that blind people need. Braille is, you know, it's the only way of really reading that we have. So, but anyway, it's been an interesting show. Enjoyed the interviews, and thanks a lot.
Well, I really appreciate your incisive comments there, because I think that Braille is the only true path to literacy that we have, and anybody who you know, seeks to undermine Braille, really, I don't think knows anything about what they're talking about, to be quite blunt.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but anyway, you have at least one or more calls here, so I don't know what time it is there in New Zealand.
It's 2:52 in the afternoon here on Thursday afternoon.
Well, to all those here in the States, have a good evening, and you have a good afternoon.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. You're listening to ACB Radio. We've got a couple of calls, and that will probably do us, in fact, for the program. So it's probably not worth giving us a call, because chances are I won't be able to fit you in. So let's go back to the board, courtesy of Spiderphone, and say hello to area code 518. After all that, let me just make sure I've put them on the air. No, I haven't. So there you go. Paul Wickman blames his tools. I'll push the button now. Hello, area code 518.
Hello, Jonathan. This is Jerry Rishi in New York.
Hi, good to hear you.
How are you doing? I'm calling about the census numerator thing.
Hmm.
I was a census numerator in the United States here. And I got to tell you, it wasn't a very easy matter to get that position. I took the test as a blind person, and I passed the test. They called me on the phone and offered me a position. Then they found out I was blind two weeks later and tried to discourage me from showing up for the training. I had to make several calls to Washington and complain to several people, and after about 10 days of that, I finally received a call from a regional office in Boston, Massachusetts, and the woman who called me finally agreed to let me try it, and I did do it successfully, but it wasn't easy. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm listening fascinated. Tell me about what the job entails. What did you have to actually do?
The United States is divided up into several regions. My particular town has 4,800 people in it, and it was divided up into several areas, and we were first given 40 hours of training and then issued these maps. The maps are nothing but four borders. The borders might be invisible, or they might be visible. They might be dry creek beds. They might be highways. They might be town borders, village borders, whatever. And it's up to us to, by whatever means, determine where our boundaries are and locate living quarters within the dwelling and mark them on the map, assign them an address, go interview the people who live in those quarters and confirm the address and the official address and issue the questionnaire, you know, how many children they have, how many, you know, how old are you, what's your names and all that kind of stuff. But it's a very visually oriented procedure, and I didn't do it by myself, of course. I had a sighted person help me. With no help of the Census Bureau, by the way, I had to find the person myself, and I got the New York State Commission for the Blind to pay this person. That the census people wouldn't pay them. They couldn't see any point in paying two people to do the job of one. This person had to go through they treat this very seriously. They had to go through a security clearance and all this kind of stuff and get the background check, and they treat this central, and it was a pretty involved process, but the person did get cleared, and I got to do the job. In fact, I start next week on part two of the census.
That's fantastic. And so you see, all this technology in the world can't, in some cases, substitute for appropriate use of a human reader. But was there much that you were able to do electronically?
That's what I'm trying to demonstrate to them. But everything is paperwork. They gave us, in the training, they issued us probably 30 pounds of paperwork, textbooks, forms, sample forms, a big plastic bag full of all kinds of documentation. And to do the census itself was totally done with paperwork. We logged everything on forms, and at the end of each day we had to assign place to meet with our area leader and hand over all the information. It was all then inspected, and he had to sign it, or she had to sign it, or whatever. And everything was done with pen and paper.
Well, I really appreciate you calling. We're right at the end of the show, and I appreciate you phoning in, because I think this is a fascinating area. We mustn't forget the low-tech solutions like human readers, and while there are some people who are saying, well, it just can't be done, here you are using a bit of initiative, using a human reader and getting it done, and you got through the vetting process, and I say hats off to you for that, and I really appreciate you giving us a call. Hey, keep us posted as you go through the process, and let us know how you're getting on. I'd love to hear.
Well, thank you, John.
Brilliant. Good Thanks night. Very much. Bye. This is ACB Radio, and I have to apologize to our caller who's on the line. We're just out of time, and I apologize for that, but that was a fascinating call, and I wanted to hear as much as we could. So it looks like we're going to have to say goodbye at this point, and give us a call next week. Thanks to our friends at Spiderphone for making it all possible. I really appreciate their support, and to you as well. And thanks for sticking with us through the couple of glitches that we had at the beginning of the program. For whatever reason, the server was dropping out on us a bit. Still a fascinating talk that we had with our friends from the Sensory Access Foundation. And you see, at the end of the program, I can say it perfectly now. I should have practiced. See you next week. Stay tuned to ACB Radio, won't you? Bye for now.